Good morning. It is the week of December 24th. This is Amit Marwaha, Director of Investor Relations and Finance at Telerion Inc. This morning, I have joining with me Meg Gentles, CEO of Telerion. Good morning, Meg.
Good morning, Amit.
Thank you for joining us. We are here after a couple months. Last time we met, we provided an update to institutional investors, and you mentioned that we would provide a year-end update just to tell people where we're at and how things are progressing. So I wanted to spend a few minutes just getting an update from you and providing a broader overview of where things are at, if that's okay with you. So I guess we can fire away here. We're approaching the end of 2018. Can we dive into, if you can provide us an update on where the commercial progress is headed? And I guess, first of all, to kick it off, can we talk a bit about the VTOL deal that we announced a couple weeks ago? If you can talk a bit about what the benefits are to Telerion, how this deal came about, and we can go from there.
Sure. I think the benefits to Telerion, let's just talk about it in dollars. So a 15-year contract between us and VTOL to deliver LNG to them, priced off of a JKM index. So roughly $6 billion value in the contract over the 15-year period. We're very excited, actually, about starting the commercial relationship with VTOL. And there are a lot of things that are important and sort of groundbreaking, I guess, about the contract. First, the pricing off of JKM is a harbinger of how the market is evolving. And we've been talking for many years about the struggle in the LNG market and pricing long-term deals and finding a price mechanism that actually works to give price information about the fundamentals in the market. And the LNG has been struggling as it indexes off of other energy markets. So indexes off of US nat gas or international oil. And that has to change because LNG itself is its own commodity and is one of the world's, you know, today largest interconnected markets. So JKM, the Japan-Korea marker, is increasing liquidity every day and is becoming the price clearing mechanism for LNG. So indexing a sale to VTOL to the JKM price is really important for development of LNG as a true commodity.
Can we dig into some of these topics that you just discussed here? In terms of the duration of this agreement, it's about 15 years. How should people think about the balance of Telerion's portfolio in terms of the tenor, the length of the contracts? Should we think about the balance of the capacity in our portfolio being marketed in similar type of duration?
Yeah, the Telerion portfolio, we expect that to be between 11 and 12 million tons of LNG coming from Driftwood. Of course, over time, we will add to that portfolio as we're able to grow. And we'll manage the portfolio with a combination of short-term, medium-term, and long-term contracts. We'll be more focused on the sort of prompt five-year period and managing that portfolio really closely. And then medium and long-term contracts will kind of layer in on a balance of risk management and opportunity for margin capture and balancing various financing needs that we have in the business over time. So I think on an overall portfolio, the long-term contracts will probably comprise, you know, the smallest percentage as we really manage that prompt five-year period.
Okay, that's really helpful. Let's dig into some of the commodity factors here. We've had a meaningful run-up at least first half of the winter this year in U.S. gas prices. How have customers reacted to this price action of late?
I think everything that's been happening in the market has been really validating the model that we've put together, right? Mm-hmm. So as U.S. nat gas prices have been fairly high over the course of this winter, I think, you know, hitting 470, 475 in MMBTU, that's really reinforced the importance of putting together Driftwood LNG and mitigating the exposure of LNG leaving Driftwood to U.S. Henry Hub prices. So what we are offering to customers is, you know, an investment in the entity and a delivery of LNG at the cost to produce the LNG, which should be able to leave Driftwood tailgate at roughly $3 an MMBTU produced from the Haynesville. So that has been really, really important and validating what we've been telling all of our investors. So the customers that are coming to Driftwood as our partner, and of course the Tellurian Inc. investors.
So I guess at the same time, while you've seen the run-up in natural gas prices here in the U.S., you've seen a lot of divergences globally. JKM prices had taken off. They're still relatively high. But at the same time, you've seen a reduction in oil prices globally. Can you talk a bit about how our model compares versus the Henry Hub model and the crude link contracts, and how customers, what's the feedback you've been getting there in terms of how our offering shapes up or compares versus the other offerings that are being marketed by other projects globally? Can you talk a bit about how they all compare and what's the feedback you're getting now?
Yeah, there's no doubt that as U.S. gas prices are high and worldwide oil prices are, you know, experiencing downward pressure, that there's, you know, negative pressure on that Henry Hub indexed model coming from LNG coming from the U.S. So as oil prices have been coming down a bit and U.S. nat gas has been high, that's even more indication that the LNG business is a commodity business, and the way to compete in a commoditizing arena is to always be the lowest cost. This is why we have focused incessantly on low cost, low cost, low cost, and being able to provide our partners at Driftwood with the lowest cost LNG available. We know that natural gas can be produced in the U.S. for less than a dollar an MMBTU, and even with the cost of drilling added in, you know, roughly $1.50 leaving the wellhead. So there's no doubt that from a cost standpoint, partners in the project can participate in a low-cost competitive supply that will always enter the market on a competitive basis. And this is really key and reinforced by the changing environment of both oil prices and gas prices.
In terms of, you've seen the front end of the gas curve in the U.S. Spike, but on the back end, you continue to see a drift lower. Has that impacted the behavior or discussions on the upstream acquisition side that we're looking to acquire some acreage over time? Anything material there?
The gas curve actually out into 2019, 2020, 2021 has been coming down, right? So over the last 6 months, we've seen movement downward in the forward curve from roughly $3 to $2.75, now to, I think, roughly the $2.65 range, which has been, frankly, supportive for our discussions of acquiring acreage in the Haynesville. We continue to pursue the 15 TCF of resource that we're intending to acquire in the Haynesville, and have very fruitful discussions with sellers of assets in that basin. So the price activity on the prompt end of the curve hasn't really impacted long-term valuations.
Okay, that's helpful. Let's shift to the commercial offering. Can we talk a bit about where we stand in the process, what discussions are looking like with the customers, and how we should think about things from here?
The million-dollar question everyone wants to know.
Yes, yes.
The discussions with the customers are going very well. We have now been able to narrow down to a good short list that looks like we'll be ready for phase one. We are negotiating the partnership documents with them, which is a suite of documents that includes the sale and purchase of the LNG and also the governance of the partnership itself, so the partnership agreement. The partners are going through, you know, a fairly detailed process. As most people know, we've had a data room open. Now we have outside third-party advisors that are going through the models, the EPC contract, and all of the data that we can provide them on the Haynesville to understand the production of the resource. And we will have a fairly good group to be able to break ground in the first half of 2019. We probably unfortunately got a little bit over fixated on December 31, 2018 as a deadline. As we finalize negotiations with the customers, that's gonna change probably to 2019. People have asked us, why is there a change in the schedule? And there's not really a change per se. There's simply a process that we have several counterparties that are working through. As we talk, you know, about the regulatory schedule and kind of the process for taking FID, we don't really expect any change there.
When you look or compare your previous experience in negotiating these commercial agreements, do you see, how does this process compare to your previous history of negotiating commercial deals? Does it feel about the same where we are on the timelines of learning, I guess, the curve in which customers go through from initial process to the finish line? How does that all compare?
It actually feels about the same.
Okay.
As when we were negotiating Sabine Pass Phase 1,
mm-hmm.
right? So people are working through the process in a detailed manner. They all have different approval processes that they go through in their company, sometimes also involving their government.
Mm-hmm.
They want to make sure, as they are about to be the first on a very new model, that they have investigated everything, validated everything, and been able to show their management that they've considered a number of alternatives. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into being that first group,
mm-hmm.
More so than being the second group in, you know, in any project. The good news is that in terms of, I guess, reputation, reliability, the Tellurian team and the Driftwood EPC contract, including Bechtel as a contractor, is really first rate, and I think the gold standard in the market. So the confidence in the project is extremely high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the people that we're talking to, because they talk about it in the press,
sure.
right? And say that they're working with Tellurian. We've been very careful not to talk about anyone, because we're really committed to sort of the confidentiality terms that we agreed with people, but some of the news already comes out from the other side. So you can start to see the sort of short list forming,
mm-hmm.
out of the group of roughly, you know, 35 companies that are sort of active in the data room. We'll end up with, you know, between 4 and 8 partners for phase one.
Okay.
And phase one, as everybody knows, is at a minimum the first 11 million tons of LNG. So for the minimum amount that we'll sell, about 8 million tons of LNG to the customers, which will raise $4 billion of equity and provide the equity support for the bank financing. And if we end up with 15 million tons in phase one, that is also fine. We just go forward with a little more on the first piece and layer in the rest of the capacity over time. And there's no doubt in my mind that over the course of the 4 to 5 years construction period, we construct the entire 27.6 million ton facility. So it's just a matter of working through the sequencing of the first group.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was very thorough. Thank you for walking us through that. just, I guess, moving along with regards to timeline, can we talk a bit about the regulatory process? If you can give us an update on how we should think about the regulatory phasing, if you want to put it that way, through the first half of the year, when we expect to get all our environmental related permits, when we can break ground, things to that effect.
So the FERC has actually been working very efficiently. They have a schedule for issuing the final environmental impact statement in January. We do expect them to meet their schedule. They are continuing to work through some of the things happening in DC today. So everything looks to be on course for issuing the final environmental impact statement. After the EIS comes out, then there are several things that we work together with the FERC on for them to release the order to begin construction, and that is the thing that goes before the commissioners for a vote. So, you know, that will take between 30 and 90 days to complete that process. We have an uncontested permit. So we don't have any third parties that have standing in the permit to object to anything or make final comments. So with an uncontested permit, the time period between the FEIS and the order should be relatively shorter rather than later. So yeah, really comfortable that the FERC is moving very efficiently.
And in terms of how people should think about timelines on breaking ground, announcing FID, can you walk us through what the updates are there?
Still on our course to break ground in the first half of 2019. Okay. So this has always been our intended schedule, and we're moving forward on that basis, which will enable us to produce first LNG in 2023. And we're very focused on making that 2023 to 2025-6 window to be ramping up production from the plant, because we do foresee that the LNG market will be fairly tight during that time period, since there's not a lot of new construction.
So in spite of what we're seeing on the commercial side, some a bit of slippage there, you're still comfortable with regards to the first half of the year, let's call it breaking ground. Is that the right way to think about it?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, that's always been the important piece of the schedule.
Okay.
Is starting construction and doing the project with an EPC contractor that can stay on schedule. So I can't stress enough the importance of Bechtel on the project and the track record that you can see in U.S. LNG construction with Sabine Pass and Corpus Christi, both Bechtel jobs that are ahead of schedule, materially ahead of schedule, compared to some of the other projects that are behind schedule.
Before we move on, any thoughts on the government shutdown here late in 2018?
Many thoughts on it in general, but in terms of how it relates to Driftwood, don't see any impact in the FERC process.
Okay. Let's shift to the construction process a bit here, if we can get some updates. With regards to the engineering, procurement, and construction terms, we announced our wrapped EPC contract about a year ago. Can you provide an update on where things stand there? We've heard and seen various anecdotes around the volatility in commodity prices and labor costs. Any thoughts there?
Sure. The EPC contract we signed with Bechtel about a year ago, you're right, Amit. It is a fixed price, truly lump sum turnkey contract where one contractor is integrating the entire job and guaranteeing the performance of the entire plant. And that contract stays in place. So it always anticipated this being the timeline, you know, fairly long period between signing and starting construction. There are a few things that we will finalize when we give Bechtel notice to proceed, and we've been working with them even to continue the engineering. So we'll have some reductions and some increases in the overall EPC contract price to finalize the notice to proceed. And all of those things have really been accounted for in the total driftwood budget through some of the contingency that we've been carrying. There's a lot of discussion in the Gulf Coast about labor costs and reasons that how labor is impacting LNG projects. We candidly don't see a material change in the labor market, and we anticipated a lot of activity in construction on the Gulf Coast, not only for LNG, but also for industry overall. So the current labor market is completely in line with our expectations and was anticipated when we signed the contract. In terms of commodities, we are a little bit sensitive to some of the activity on metals and tariffs, and we've been always carrying some contingency in our budget to account for that. So pretty comfortable in the total budget, and actually fairly happy to see metals costs now starting to come back down.
Got it. That's helpful. Let's shift to the last topic here with regards to the financials. You've seen a sell-off in the energy patch specifically, and some volatility or a ramp-up in volatility in the capital markets. Can you provide us with some clarity with regards to some thoughts that have come in specifically around what the bank finance process is looking like? How's that all shaping up? And some concerns out there with regards to credit spreads widening out, levers that we have there, things to that effect.
The bank process has been really robust. Frankly, exceeding my expectations on bank market robustness.
That's good.
So we have been working with many banks that we've worked with in the past. They understand the project. We have been testing pretty stringently the overall depth of the bank market to confirm, and indeed we have confirmed, that there is good depth there to structure the financing with, you know, roughly a 70-30 debt to equity split, which is reflected in the corporate presentation numbers that we've shown. And I think we have enough conservatism in our assumptions to account for widening of credit.
Okay. Last question here with regards to liquidity. Any material updates on our cash spend, liquidity pre-FID, post-FID, just any updates there?
We're continuing fairly on the same course. So I think third quarter cash balance was roughly $175 million. We spend about $8 to $10 million a month. Continuing to advance the project forward, and totally comfortable on liquidity from now through FID.
Okay. On that note, thank you very much, Meg, for the time. Hopefully our audience finds this update useful. Everyone have a good holiday and happy new year. See you soon.
Confidential notice. This page includes links to videos that include statements made by officers and directors of Tellurian Inc., the company, and other persons. The company assumes no responsibility for statements made by persons other than its officers, directors, and other authorized spokespersons. Statements made by the company's representatives may include forward-looking statements regarding, among other things, commodity prices, regulatory and operational developments, future economic conditions, and other matters. Such forward-looking statements are subject to numerous risks and uncertainties, including the risk of unanticipated changes in market, regulatory, or business environments, and other risks described in the company's filings with the SEC, which are available on the site under Investors, Financials, Filings, and Presentations. The company does not undertake to update such forward-looking statements, which are made only as of the date indicated.